Well, I don't know if you remember, but it's been a month since we introduced this particular study, and we're now going to be able to get into just looking at some of the characters of the Old Testament and to see what we can learn from them and see what application we can make from their lives. I wasn't sure where I wanted to start and who I wanted to look at first, and so my OCD kicked in. I thought we'd just go in alphabetical order. And when you go in alphabetical order, well, the first one you get to is A.A. Aaron, and that doesn't mean we're going in alphabetical order next week. I'm probably going to skip to Z or something just to throw you off. So don't try to skip ahead and think you know where we're going to go. But I thought we'd look at Aaron this morning. And I said, you know, when we introduced this, that I did not want to look at some of the, what you would call the big characters or the major characters like a like an Adam or an Abraham or a Moses or a David or one of those that that we know a lot about. And as you look at it, how do you categorize Aaron? You say that he's a major character in the Old Testament? Or is he one of those that while he's a major character, you don't read a whole lot about him? When we get to, we'll have some slides at the end of this lesson about lessons that we need to learn from Aaron. And I think Aaron's got that middle child syndrome. Do you know what that middle child syndrome is? Middle child's just kind of neglected, right? Middle child's forgotten. You got the oldest, and you know they're the oldest, and so they're the greatest until somebody else comes along. And then you've got the baby in the family, and the baby gets all the attention, and the baby gets to have everything the baby wants. And any middle children in here besides me? Middle children are neglected, aren't they? We're like nobodies in the family, right? You know, you got the older, you got the younger, and then you got the people that are in the middle. Well, that's kind of like Aaron. He's a middle child, and so when you begin to look at his life, maybe he is not as well known, obviously, as Moses, and we give Moses a lot of the credit for different things, and sometimes we failed to see that Aaron was right there with him. Let's look at some facts just briefly. Did I skip a slide here or what? Oh, no, this is my first slide. See if you can fill in these blanks. Who were Aaron's parents? Amram and Jochebed. All right, good. Three people knew that. What tribe was he born into?
Levi.
All right, so in Exodus 6, we learn both of those things. In what land was he born?
Egypt.
He's born in Egypt, born there as a slave, and spends his first, I won't say the number because we might get to it in a minute, spends the first several years of his life in slavery in Egypt. Who's his older sister?
Miriam.
Who's his baby brother?
Moses.
Three years younger than him, Exodus 7 and verse 7, is Moses. Who's his wife? This one you might not know as easily. Well, if you take Eli, you remember the old judge, and you take the queen of Sheba, remember her who came to Solomon, if you take Eli and Sheba and put them together, you get his wife. Not literally if you took Eli and Sheba, but if you take their names and put them together, You get his wife, and you've got the four sons that are also listed in Exodus 6 and verse 23. Nadab and Abihu, are those pretty well known as his sons?
Yes.
From Leviticus chapter 10. And also, we might not know so much about Ithamar, but we know a little bit about Eleazar, as he was the one who took his place. All right, that was to see how much you knew. What do we know about this guy's character? Is Aaron a good guy or a bad guy?
Middle child.
He's a middle child. What are you saying about middle children now? That's not what we were saying about middle children. You're going in a direction that middle children don't go. Middle children are perfect. Middle children never make any mistakes. And nobody ever knows it because they're neglected, so nobody ever knows that they're perfect. What kind of character does he have?
He's easily led.
He's kind of a follower, isn't he?
He bends to peer pressure.
Would you say he's a good guy? That he was devout and religious?
Yeah.
Yes. Most of the time. I like the second one. Was he a great supporter and a helper to Moses? Most of the time. Was he Moses's, in many cases, his right-hand man? Did he play that role well? Sure he did. Would that have been a hard role to play? Would it have been hard to be the assistant to your younger brother? That's going to test your faith, isn't it? You know, here's your younger brother, and you're his helper. That would be difficult. But for the most part, he played it pretty well. But what you've been saying, in some cases, he's kind of weak. He's kind of timid. Sometimes he's easily led astray when he's not around Moses. And we'll get to this on one of those application slides. But think about this for just a minute. Where did he spend the first 83 years of his life? Egypt, okay? What was he in Egypt? He's a slave. How many decisions did he get to make for himself? When you're a slave, you don't get to so much decide what you're going to do or what you're going to think or how you're going to be. It's just kind of given to you. So for 83 years, his life is mapped out for him. And now he gets out on his own. You think your children have a hard time after 17 years in your home and then they get out there on their own trying to make their own decisions? Imagine being 83 and you're just now trying to start making your own decisions. Would that be tough? Of course, you're going to live to over 100, so that would be different. Carol?
With regard to what you said about him allowing his younger brother to be the leader, we have indication in the scripture that Moses knew that he was going to do something for God, that he was going to... Was there any indication in the scriptures that Aaron or Miriam knew this?
Not that I'm aware of. The question is there any indication that Miriam or Aaron had any idea that they were going to be used for God? And not that I know of. We know that... look in Exodus chapter 4. This is skipping ahead a little bit, but we might not even get there to begin with, so why not skip ahead anyway? Exodus chapter 4. Exodus 4 and verse 10. This is skipping right into the middle of this particular occasion where God and Moses are speaking to each other. Moses said to the Lord, "O my Lord," Exodus 4:10, "I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm not an eloquent man. I am slow of speech, I'm slow of tongue." So the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say." But Moses said, "O Lord, please, send by the hand of whomever else you may send." So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, "Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God, and you shall take his rod in your hand with which you shall do the signs." In verse 14, God says, "Aaron is coming to you." Now, why was Aaron coming to him? God sent him. God is not just saying, "Well, look, there's Aaron, he's coming, why don't you just use him?" It's one of those occasions where God had already chosen Aaron and had already known that Aaron was going to be used as his mouthpiece. It's one of those situations where God already knew about Moses' needs, God already knew about this conversation that would take place in Exodus 4, and God was already making a way for Moses to have a spokesman. You know, it's kind of like that story in Acts chapter 8 where there's that man riding along in a chariot reading from the Bible, and he needs somebody to teach him. God already knew before that man ever left Jerusalem, God knew that man was going to be riding in that chariot and need somebody to meet him. So before that Ethiopian eunuch ever left Jerusalem, God called upon Philip, who was in Samaria, and says, you head south to meet this guy. Philip left before the Ethiopian left. Did God know that this Ethiopian was going to have a need? Yeah, and he already had a plan for it. Did God know Moses was going to have a need? Yes, and he already had a plan for it. Already had it in place. But while we sometimes think about Aaron's weaknesses and his shortfalls, and we're going to look at three of those, hopefully this morning, three of his shortfalls, he must have been a penitent man. He must have been penitent for the ways he had messed up. One, because God continued to use him. If God continued to use him in that role as a high priest, Aaron must have been penitent and sorry for what he had done. But also, when you get to Psalm 106, and you begin to see, Psalm 106 kind of has a brief history of Israel. You've got listed there Aaron, and in verse 16, he's called the saint of the Lord. Well, why is he, if he's such a weakling, if he made so many mistakes, why would he be called the saint of the Lord? Well, because he made mistakes, but then he got it right. And, you know, sometimes we look at Peter in the New Testament. Did Peter make mistakes? Yeah. Let's see. Aaron built a golden calf, and Peter denied the Lord three times. Which one's worse? I wouldn't recommend either one of them, would you? But did Peter get it right? Yeah. And sometimes you look at some of these individuals, and while they made mistakes, it's obvious that they must have made changes in his life. He spent the first 83 years, as we said, of his life as a slave in Egypt. And how interesting and difficult that must have been for his formative years. He, along with Moses, obviously affected Israel's exodus out of the land of Egypt. And obviously when they went before Pharaoh, it was not just Moses and Pharaoh, but Aaron was there as well. And then you see in the last 40 years of his life, serving as a high priest, not just a high priest, serving as the founding, the very first high priest of the nation of Israel. And he helped to formulate and to found and to put together a religious system that was intact for 1,500 years until the time of Christ. And then there in parentheses, even to this day, parts of it still in existence in some form or another. And so while he's a neglected character of the Old Testament, you might say he plays a major role. What do you know about his death? Any idea how old he was when he died? Let's see, if you take 83 when he left Egypt, and then for the last 40 years, what have you got? 123 years old when he dies. Do you know where he died? Just before they entered into the promised land, he dies on Mount Hor, which if you get out a Bible map, is down south of Canaan. It's near Edom. Why was he not allowed? Well, that's going to skip ahead, so we'll just leave it for there. Eleazar, remember that son we looked at? His son took his place, and when he died, Numbers chapter 20, I think it's the last verse or next to the last verse, Numbers 20, says that the nation mourned for him for 30 days. So that's just a brief overview of some of the facts that we can learn about the life of Aaron. I want to look this morning very briefly at just three of those what we would call failures, three of those occasions in his life where Aaron didn't make the best of decisions. The first one I want us to look at is probably the one we think of first in Exodus 32. Get your Bibles out. We're going to look at one occasion in the book of Exodus, and then two occasions in the book of Numbers. Just three times in his life, and just these limited to these three, where Aaron didn't make some good choices. And probably you put this one right up at the top of Aaron not making a good choice. Exodus 32, where are the children of Israel in Exodus 32? They're at Mount Sinai. Were they there for just a couple days? They were there for a year. You go back to Exodus chapter 24, and when Moses goes up on the mountain, who does he take with him, by the way? Does he take Aaron? takes Joshua. He takes Joshua with him up on Mount Sinai. And when he leaves Aaron and Hur in charge. H-U-R, not H-E-R. Leaves them in charge. And says if man has any problem, verses 14 and 15, they can go to Aaron. So he goes up on the mountain. How long is Moses up on the mountain? Great, the answer's on the board. 40 days, good answer. He's up on the mountain for 40 days. You get to Exodus 32. And in Exodus 32 and verse 1, the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain. The people gathered together to Aaron and they said, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." What are they asking for?
An idol.
Why would they ask for that?
That's what they were used to in Egypt.
Okay. Not only had Aaron spent his entire life in Egypt, where had the rest of these people spent their entire lives? What did they know? What did they understand about gods, plural? What do they understand about that? Oh, idolatry. Well, they're used to that. And now they've come out, and when you go back earlier in the chapters of Exodus, Exodus chapter 6, where God begins to reveal that I am the Lord. When you read the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, and what's the very first of the Ten Commandments? You shall have no other gods before me. We think that's pretty obvious. For people coming out of the land of Egypt, why did that need to be the first one? Because they had been surrounded by idolatry. So they come to Aaron, and this is their request. Here's the high priest. What would you expect a high priest to say to this request? No. And if he's a high priest, wouldn't you expect a little sermon out of him? I mean, if this guy... No, we're not going to have gods, and here's why. Who had a hand up? Ruth? No. No, he was not a high priest then, but... Right. Right, when you get a couple chapters later, and that's the case. But a man who's in a position like this, who was chosen as the first high priest, the man who's Moses' right hand man, the man who had affected their exodus, their delivery by the hand of God out of Egypt. What should he have said?
He was the man who spoke for Moses.
Sure, he's the man who spoke. Well, Moses isn't around to tell him what to say. Remember what God said? Remember what God said to Moses? You shall be to him as what? God. Does that strike? When you read that, does that strike you? You shall be to him as God. Wait a minute. What does that mean? That means, and it's exactly what God's saying in those verses. You take the words and you give him the words. Where's Moses going to get the words? Well, he's going to get them from God. Moses is going to take those words. He's going to give them to Aaron, and Aaron's going to turn around and speak those words. What's a prophet? One who speaks for another, right? So what's Aaron? He is Moses' prophet. Now, understand that Moses is God's prophet, so put all of that in context. But here's Aaron to speak for Moses, but Moses isn't around. So what happens in verse 2? Aaron said, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. Okay, if you want a god, sure thing. So people gathered together. They demanded Aaron make them a god, and so Aaron capitulated, called for the gold, and made them a golden calf. Look in verse 4. He received the gold. He fashioned it. Who did it? Who received the gold? Who fashioned it with an engraving tool? Who made a molded calf? That's important to know. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." Hello. You sure about that? What's interesting in verse 5 is Aaron makes a proclamation that says, "Tomorrow is a feast to who?" Jehovah. You see capital L-O-R-D? This isn't just, tomorrow's a feast to a god. Tomorrow is a feast to Jehovah. So this idol, this golden calf, was not just a god to them. What was Aaron saying about this idol? That this was an image of Jehovah. So that first commandment was, thou shalt have no other gods before me. What was the second commandment? Thou shalt not make unto me any graven image. Well, let's see. We've broken the first two right here. We're on our way to a triple play, not too far. So Moses comes down from the mountain. What's Moses' reaction? Is he angry? How could you tell that Moses was angry? Can you imagine holding those Ten Commandments, those two tablets written on both sides, written by the finger of God, and he sees this, and what's his reaction? To take these things that are the product of God and you throw them down? Yeah, I'd say he's angry, wouldn't you? Say he's a little upset about what he sees. And so Moses calls Aaron together, and what's Aaron's response? The people made me do it. Look in verse 21. Moses asked the question, what did this people do that you have brought so great a sin upon them? Aaron says in verse 22, do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people that they are set on evil. It's their fault. Moses, you know them. You know, don't. They can't make the right decision. Look at verse 24. I said to them, whoever has the gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me. I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. Moses, you know, what are you supposed to do with these people? Yeah, I took their gold and I threw it in the fire, and look at what came out. It's this calf. That's why we pointed out, what did Aaron do when he received it? He fashioned it. He molded it. Oh, but Moses, you know, it just came. Does this sound like something your kids have said to you? It just happened. I don't know. You know, why is your brother bleeding? He fell off the bed. I don't know. You know, you just kind of, it just happened. It wasn't me. And that's what he's saying. Why is that Aaron's response? He didn't want to take responsibility.
Well, because he knew it was wrong. He knew what he did,
it was wrong. It's wrong. He knew it was wrong. He didn't want to take responsibility for his action. So he says, well, it just happened. This calf came out. And as a result, they become a derision to their enemies. And it's only through the intercession of Moses, when you get to those last few verses of the chapter, it's only because Moses intercedes on Aaron's behalf and the nation's behalf that God doesn't destroy. And that's what God wanted to do. You go back up to about verse 10 and read those verses that follow verse 10. God's ready to destroy them. God says, I'm ready to wipe them out. And Moses, I'll just give you a nation. God's angry. What do we learn? What lessons do we learn from this that we need to take and apply to us? Did we learn anything, Cain? Peer pressure. Is it real? Is it real to an 83-year-old? I mean, we think of peer pressure, we think, oh, it's for the kids. I'm not going to ask if there's any 83-year-olds in here, although I could look at some of you and say you're pretty close, but I won't. And who am I going to look at next? I'll look at Greg next because he's not 83. Peer pressure. It's very real. Is there a matter of pride? I mean, Moses goes up in the mountain, Exodus 24, verse 14. If anybody's got an issue, you go to Aaron or her. Yeah, I'm in charge. So there might be a little bit of pride there. Saying, the people came to me. Trina?
And yes, you hear it and you know it's right, but it hasn't been proven in you.
is sort of like, you know, they had been brought up this way, and this is what they knew. It was a habit that they had, and when they came up against opposition, they defaulted to what they had known. And
well, it's a growth process, isn't it?
Yes, and this is.
And they're trying. Hello, they're trying to grow in their relationship with God. Now, you would think that the 10 plagues would have developed a relationship between them and God pretty quick, right? You know, you would think crossing the Red Sea on dry ground. Yeah. You know, I'd get pretty close to God at that moment, wouldn't you? You're walking through it, you know, on dry ground and you got water on both sides. I'd be real close to God right then, wouldn't you? But you look at the history of Israel and what are they constantly doing? They're constantly going through this cycle where they're close to God and then they turn away from God. You read the book of Judges, and that's what it's all about. Let's go to a second one. I want to at least get through these three if we can. Go to Numbers chapter 12, and we'll look at this one kind of quickly. In Numbers chapter 12, Moses has married, depending on what translation you have, either called a Cushite woman, that just means an African woman, or an Ethiopian. And so in Numbers 12, he's married this woman. And Miriam and Aaron, they apparently don't seem real happy about Moses marrying this woman. But when you get into verse 2, what you learn is that it's not really that they're so much concerned about Moses marrying this woman, is they're just jealous. Not of the marriage, but they're jealous of his role, of Moses' role. Look in verse 2. They said, Miriam and Aaron, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" What does that sound like? They're jealous. You know, they're upset that God is dealing with Moses and not dealing directly with them. And so the rest of that verse says, "And the Lord heard it." Is that a lesson for us? You know, we get in our little murmuring escapades, and guess who is also hearing our murmurings? God's hearing what we're saying. And what's in it? Can you imagine having a murmuring escapade? God hears it, and then God calls you into a conference. That's what happens here. God hears it, and then what does God do? He calls Moses, Miriam, and Aaron, into a conference with him. How would you like that? You just were saying something about somebody, and God says, "Hey, come here, let's have a meeting." Okay, I won't say that again. And you look at those three verses, verse 6, 7, and 8. When God comes and speaks to Miriam and to Aaron, and he says, what does God do with a prophet? You see, what God does with a prophet is that God speaks to that prophet in a dream, the end of verse 6. He sees a vision, he speaks to him in a dream. But that's not how I've dealt with my servant Moses. Isn't Moses a prophet? Yeah. What more is God doing with Moses than he would do with just an average prophet? He's talking to him face to face. And God says, "How dare you? How dare you question my relationship with Moses? How dare you question this man?" Look at the end of verse 8. "Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And so what happens? Miriam is smitten with leprosy. So if a conference with God hadn't gotten your attention, now you get leprosy. And it's one of those things where the indication in this verse, in this passage, is not only did that get Miriam's attention, but his sister getting leprosy got Aaron's attention. Would that get your attention? You know, if both of you are in trouble and yet your friend or your sister is the one who gets the beating, is the one who gets fired, is the one who gets thrown in prison, is the one who whatever, and you're thinking, glad that wasn't me. And Aaron goes to the Lord and begins to plead and to confess their sin. I don't know if he felt sorry for his sister or if he was just scared that he was next. He goes to God and says, "God, we were wrong." And Moses goes to God and says, and asks God to forgive them. What do you learn from this instance in the life of Aaron? What application do we need to make? Romans 15:4 says that these things are written for our learning. What are we supposed to learn from this? not to make the same mistake. What kind of mistake? Why do we not make this? What are we supposed to learn? What mistakes are we supposed to learn not to make here?
Pride, jealousy.
Pride and jealousy. What is verse 3 interesting to you in parentheses? Now, the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who are on the face of the earth. Put aside for a moment the fact that Moses is the one who wrote that. Why did he write it? All scripture is given by the inspiration of... Did Moses choose those words? He didn't choose those words. Put aside the fact that he's the one who wrote that. And put that in context here. Moses is very humble. What are Miriam and Aaron? Not so humble. Now put it in context again. God is speaking to Moses face to face. Not like some other prophet just in a dream. Face to face. Does Moses get his ego built up? Say, yep. I'm the one God's talking to. No, he's humble. Friend?
In the New Testament, it talks about how God has the privilege of choosing who he wants, who is more important than others for certain jobs or whatever. It's, you know, whoever he chooses is who he chooses. And Miriam wasn't happy with that.
Well, Miriam and Aaron were not happy that Moses was more important than them. And you begin reading some of the stories in the New Testament, and that's what Fran's talking about. You know, you think about the mother of James and John who came to Jesus, and what was her request? Oh, yeah, you're going to have your kingdom. Let my sons... And what did Jesus begin to teach after that? A lesson about humility. Humility is critical for us to have. Let's at least get to this third story. We know Numbers 20, and we usually talk about it in the life of Moses. Numbers 20 is where Moses, we know it is the story where Moses strikes the rock instead of speaking to it. God tells Moses to speak to the rock, and instead he strikes it. But as you read through this story, and we don't have time this morning, but as you read through this story, notice how many times it says Moses and Aaron. See, we've got Numbers 20 pegged as a story about Moses' disobedience. What we've got to see is this is not just Moses. It's Moses and Aaron, Moses and Aaron, Moses and Aaron. And you get down into verse where they're calling out to the people after God tells them to speak to the rock. Look in verse 10. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And they said, "Hear now, you rebels, must who? We bring water for you out of this rock." Well, who was it that took the staff and struck the rock twice? Well, it was Moses. Who's taking the credit for doing it? They both are. They're both involved in this activity. And so while we have pegged this as a time where Moses was provoked and started to strike the rock, they were both involved in it. Both of them took the glory for it. And this rash action cost both of them the privilege of entering the promised land. Why was he not able to enter the promised land? Because he built the golden calf? No. Even after that, God was going to allow him. But it's right here when you get into verse 12. God says, "Because you did not believe me or hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, you shall not bring this assembly into the promised land." This is why Aaron did not get to go. So you get to the end of this chapter, and the end of this chapter is where he dies. We don't have time to look at these six. I hate to talk about people's failures and not talk about their accomplishments and their contributions. If we were to limit our scope of Aaron and say, here's where he failed, and say what a miserable guy he was, we've missed it. We've missed the picture. He's Moses' right-hand man. He's there in Exodus 4, providing oratory skills to Moses' leadership. He's side by side when they're before Pharaoh. He's right there. It's his rod that gets thrown down. He is one of the guys holding up his hands. Remember the day of battle where Moses' hands would fall and they'd start to lose? He'd raise his hand and they would win. He's one of the guys holding his hands up. Here's this infant nation, and he's helping to provide leadership. When the people rebelled, remember in Numbers 16, the story of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, that here's Aaron standing right beside him in this rebellion. And here he is as high priest providing leadership. I mean, he was providing the spiritual and the religious leadership in this nation, in this infant nation. And there's other failures we could look, there's other contributions we could look at. But as you begin to look at the life of Aaron, there's a lot of lessons that we need to learn. I've got 3 slides of them, but we're not going to take time to look at them because the bell's going to get us. There's a lot of lessons for us to learn. There's a lot of lessons for us to learn in that I can have weaknesses, but God can still use me. Did Moses have a weakness? I can't speak, Lord. I'm not eloquent. Okay? I can still use you. Did Aaron have weaknesses? Sure. Peer pressure, you know, pride and lack of humility and some of these things. Could God still use him? Yes. Can God still use you and me, even if we've got weaknesses? Even if we're not perfect? I hope so. Anybody in here perfect? As soon as Betty Davis gets out, I'll ask that question again, and then nobody will be able to raise their hand. All right? None of us are perfect. But yet God can still use us. As you begin to look at the life of Aaron, you see a man who was in a leadership position. And yet, even though he failed, he must have had a penitent heart because he still continued to be used by God. Notice that Aaron didn't give up on God. He made mistakes, but he didn't just throw up his hands and say, "Oh, well, I can't do it." He kept on trying to do what was right. And then the idea of him standing beside Moses, playing the role of assistant. You know, sometimes we want to be in the spotlight. We've got to be number one. We've got to have all of the attention. And yet, sometimes we just need to be a helper. We need to be somebody who assists somebody else. They're the ones who are important. They're the ones who are in the spotlight. They're the ones who get all the attention. And all I am is the one standing behind them and trying to help them. A lot of lessons we can learn here. I hope you'll study the life of Aaron and learn more lessons from him and make application. We'll break for just a few minutes and begin worship in just a little while.